the Pittsburgh Cultural Trust brings events to the city every year, and not just performances in the cultural district. They develop the downtown area, they bring in new shops and businesses, and they also help regional arts organizations, both big and small, with operational support. We have a speaker series, festivals, art galleries, dining, shopping, and a lot more. The PNC Broadway Pittsburgh series is perhaps the crown jewel of all the Trust does to promote culture in the city. And this year they're kicking off the season with the Broadway jukebox musical, Moulin Rouge. Welcome back to Accelerando. I'm Paula Tuttle, and today we're getting ready for the opening of Moulin Rouge at the Benenim Center. It won the highest number of Tony Awards in 2021. They got 14 nominations and 10 awards, including Best Musical. And today I'm talking to Katie Kresik, one of the four orchestrators that shared the Tony Award for Best Orchestration. Katie is concertmaster of the orchestra that performs on Broadway. I'm also talking to Stephen Weiss, and he'll be stepping into the concertmaster role at the Benenim for Moulin Rouge. The show opened at the Hirschfeld Theater the summer of 2019. It was enjoying a lot of momentum when the pandemic shut it down on March 12, 2020. And like the rest of the world, the show had to wait and see for over a year. Would it come back full force? Well, yes, it did. Katie, welcome to the show. It's really nice to see you again.
In the virtual world of sort of seeing people, right?
Yeah, it's like a throwback here. Katie, I think it's fair to say you're a highly sought after New York musician. How does it feel to be the first American woman to get a Tony Award for Best Orchestration? You're only one of four women to be nominated for this category.
Yeah, it's an incredible surprise in many ways. I think what surprised me about it, not only learning that I was the second woman to be a winner in the category, but also just learning, I think there have only been like four women nominated overall in the category, at least at the time that I won. I think since then that has changed. I think in the last 2 years there have been some others.
Why do you think there aren't that many women orchestrators? And why do you think that not many have been nominated in this category?
I can't really speak to why there aren't so many, but I would imagine that it's similar to any kind of work or artistic endeavor or, you know, academic endeavor or anything like that, where there's kind of the question about why there are so few. And I think it's something that hopefully is changing, but it seems like traditionally it's kind of a male-dominated area. So it's nice to be part of a little bit of a shift in that.
Yeah, it's slow to change, and you're part of the new wave of women that are getting this recognition. So congratulations on that. Maybe our listeners need to know what orchestration is, so let's just start there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would describe orchestration as filling in the details of, you know, a sketch, selecting the palette in order to make music really kind of come alive. And it's almost like casting in a way, but for instruments. There's sort of two levels of that musically. There's the selection of the people who will, you know, play the music, of course, and that's something we all know about. But I think the selection of the palette of instruments that are going to represent the story and sort of be the voice of the story is really the incredibly creative aspect of orchestrations. In Moulin Rouge, there are 14 musicians, but, you know, many more instruments, because we have woodwind doubler who plays five instruments, flute, clarinet, two kinds of saxophone, and piccolo. We have a trombonist who's playing bass and regular trombone.
So what was your role in all of these orchestrations?
I did the string parts for Moulin Rouge, so I really thought about it as an opportunity to enhance what was going on stage, you know, using strings as the medium, especially in the type of story that is Moulin Rouge. You know, it's turn of the century Paris, it's kind of a romantic time, but also a time that's fraught with political difficulty, and also just the idea that you're on the cusp of the turn of the century, and so that means, you know, innovation and new ideas, and that I think that's like a turn of the century.
Lots of excitement.
Always, it's sort of, so it's like you need something celebratory. You know, it focuses on this theater in Paris and these characters. It's basically their home. So Satine, who is the leading lady of the show.
Yes, she's a lady of the night.
Yes, exactly. Like a courtesan.
A courtesan.
And, and also a performer. So there's sort of like this multiplicitous aspect of her character, representative of what the music does. So it's kind of all over the place stylistically in terms of it needs to sound like a Broadway show. But really, the jukebox is comprised of the really great pop hits that were part of the original film, and then also the ones that are new and updated in the musical, so that there is a kind of a fresh sense of revision about it, you know, for like audiences now, taking songs that have been amazing and popular in the last 20 years since the film debuted and applying those into this new setting.
It sounds like it's really super fun to play.
It is, yeah.
As concertmaster, Katie leads the musicians nightly on Broadway, and she shares the 2021 Tony for Best Orchestration with Justin Levine, Charlie Rosen, and Matt Stein. Also on the show, I'm talking with Stephen Weiss, who's excited to play the show with the touring orchestra at the Benedum. Stephen is a violinist who will step into the concertmaster role of Moulin Rouge.
Stephen, how are you enjoying playing this music?
It's been an absolute pleasure. When I got the opportunity to do this, it was something that I was ready to just jump at the opportunity to do and just soak in all the knowledge from my colleagues and the advice that I had been getting from the conductor. It turns out that the guy that I'm subbing for, his name is Chuck Bontrager. And he's one of the leading electric violinists in the country. Like, he is just an absolute monster of a player. I've been following him on his socials and everything for years.
That's cool.
So it's just, it's incredible.
That's great that you know him.
I am one of two Pittsburgh musicians that is going to be part of the pit. The rest of the band are all guys from New York or I think Kennedy Center Orchestra. They travel with the production. And so a lot of these guys are plug and play because they've been doing this for months now. I kind of feel like I'm jumping on a moving train a little bit. I kind of just have to be as ready as I possibly can be. There's going to be a lot of moving parts. Like, for example, I know that the original score calls for a string quartet, but I'm actually going to be doubling on violin and viola. So I'll be switching back and forth.
So there's an earpiece and you're going to have a click track of some sort.
Yes, I'm going to be dialed in. They're going to put a mic on both of my instruments. I'm going to be pumped into the sound system for the house. In addition to that, they have created a click track for all the musicians, in addition to the baton that we see. You know, watching bits and pieces of previous shows that they've sent me, the music is so rhythmically precise. And if it's not executed as such, then it really does throw off the rhythm of the show.
Having a click track, it pulls everybody together and it guarantees that the tempo is the same. It's consistent from night to night, from stage to stage, because we know how it's different in different halls. So it makes total sense.
A click track is something that I'm used to, but if you are, you know, put it this way, a purebred classical musician, it can almost feel not musical. There's no spontaneity, there's no, you know, creativity, there's no real opportunity for artistic expression. You kind of almost feel like you're running on a treadmill versus running on pavement. You know, it can be limiting, but it's necessary.
I think it can be really useful, actually, having the click track. If you are in a different part of the pit from another musician and you have something with them, you have something in common, something that holds you together.
100%.
So it can really, yeah.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Stephen, you play in the Pittsburgh area and tour with an Irish rock band that was voted the best rock band by City Paper and best bar band by Pittsburgh Magazine. So your experience as a classical musician and your rock experience made you the guy for this gig. Has being a utility player helped you in the past?
I feel like I can safely say that I wouldn't have been asked to do this had I not joined the bands that I play with, had I not started experimenting outside of classical viola performance. As much as I love classical music and grew up with classical music, I also grew up listening to punk rock. One thing that I tell people, especially my students that are interested in doing non-classical music, is my ability to play Irish, country, bluegrass, pop music is 100% contingent on my classical training. Paired with the creativity outside of the non-classical world kind of just allowed for it. You know, I've been grateful for it.
I hear there are actually 80 songs in the musical. 80 songs.
I would 100% believe it. In one song in particular that comes to mind, that there's a medley. It's a moment where two of the main characters really discover that they have feelings for one another. And there's this love medley. And I think they hit pretty much every love song that has been written in the past 20 years. They'll take little bits and pieces and mash it together into one. In my opinion, at least, I think it's brilliant. I was watching a YouTube video and one of the comments was a mashup between this song and this song is something I never knew I needed in my life until right now. You're gonna hear things in ways that after you leave the music hall, you're never going to quite hear them the same way again.
I want to circle back to us talking about that click track. We were saying some things like it takes away from the musicality. And I don't want to leave our listeners with the idea that there isn't some artistic freedom. Don't you think that there's a chance that you can do something to have left your mark on this performance?
Yeah, and I mean, my goal would be to, you know, maybe when the tour is done or maybe as they're going to another city, to have them say, oh, I remember when Stephen Weiss added this thing here. That was really cool. Can we do that? You know, like, that would be, you know, that would be, that's kind of my goal.
A Stephen Weiss footnote.
Yes. Yeah.
Slide here.
Yeah.
You can see and hear the Tony Award-winning musical Moulin Rouge at the Benedum Theatre, September 27th to October 8th. Those of you familiar with my podcast know I always encourage support for live music. There will most definitely be live music and so much more at these performances. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, please share it with someone you think will also like it. And if you're new to Accelerando, maybe you'd like to subscribe. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music. In this week's show notes, I'll include Katie Kresik's and Stephen Weiss's links. At the website for this podcast, accelerandocast.com, you can listen to past episodes and see the sources used in the podcast, and leave a comment at the Gmail account, accelerandocast@gmail.com. Have a great week, support the musicians in your community, and hopefully get out to a live performance this week. Bye for now.